And so we'll begin. My name is Ed Markport, and I'm a parish pastor from Seattle, Washington, technically from Des Moines, Washington. And every time I say the word Des Moines, everybody hears Iowa, so then I have to do the explanation. No, it's not Iowa, it's Des Moines. And we live under the flight pattern at SeaTac Airport, and so we are used to noise, but of course, if half of your parish works for Boeing, you can't complain too much about the airplanes. And so I've been a parish pastor there for 20 years, celebrated our 20th anniversary, being as parish pastor in that congregation. And it was just really nice. I had a great party recently, which celebrated that event, and hoping if God so blesses us that way, to stay another 10 years. And so in that situation where I've been, I do other things. Our congregation has really been active in things like world hunger. I think if you've been to some of my wife's classes, 7 years ago we set a goal to raise $1 million for world hunger by the year 2000. We're doing it now in 1994. And back in October we hit the $1 million goal. And in fact, it'll be close to $2 million by the year 2000 rolls around. So our church is really strongly committed to world hunger and homelessness and sponsor a whole bunch of refugees. And we, in fact, we tried to do the thing where we sponsored homeless families, where we sponsored Asian refugees. And figured out how hard that is to take homeless families and move them into an economic and emotional transition, into responsible life and that kind of thing. Boy, it's a lot harder sponsoring an American homeless family than it was an Asian immigrant family. That's for sure. But that kind of stuff, we do a lot of that kind of stuff in the life of our parish. And so it's really a good, vital place to work and to be, and it's been a real pleasure. And then, in addition to being a parish pastor, produce educational resources for the church. Some years ago, back in the late 70s, early 80s, I published a book called Witnesses for Christ. And basically, the purpose of this book right here is to help individuals within congregations learn to feel more comfortable in speaking about Christ in their everyday conversations. And that's tonight's topic, okay? And that's the goal of this course. It's been used by, some 5,000-6,000 parishes around the country. But that's the goal of it. And it uses the marriage technique, the marriage encounter, where you write real intensively on a question, and then you talk it over with a partner. And so basically what the course is a series of questions where you get into the habit or into the pattern of dialoguing with somebody about Jesus Christ. But the purpose of this course is to do what we're going to talk about tonight, giving us a greater authority and willingness to talk to others about Jesus Christ. And we deal with that real reluctance, you know, bringing Christ into the conversation, bringing God into the conversation, trying to find a way to backdoor it so quietly that almost nobody hears or understands that we're talking about Christ. And so that's one thing that I produced some years ago. And then when I was back at Holden here in 85, I wrote this book called Quest for Better Preaching, and it's basically a text for pastors, for preachers in the church, and it's been used through the years. And then more recently, I've written a confirmation program in which the heart of the confirmation program is to persuade and enable a parent and a child to have religious conversation about the faith. That's the heart, and then a child would learn how to do daily devotions. And if you're looking for confirmation material in your congregation, I would ask you to pick one of these up. So basically, what I am a working parish pastor who's a happily married to Janet. We're celebrating our 30th wedding anniversary this coming August. And we have 3 kids and 1 Nathan with us right now. And so with that introduction, then what I'd like to do is, hi Alan, is to talk about the mission of the church. And I'm going to use this overhead, and I guess it works just as well to do it from here, this overhead. And I'd say the mission of the apostolic church. And I would like to emphasize that the missio, the direction of the church, and the apostolic is a very important word because the word apostolic means a sent, sent out into the world.
The nature of the church is not kind of a sit-back place where you have people, you wait until they come to you. It's not the mission of the waiting church. And so the whole emphasis on the church is to be the apostolic church or community. And at the heart of the mission of the church is to proclaim the gospel, the good news about Jesus Christ, in order to make disciples of Jesus Christ. And in the session that I had last time, this is the last of four sessions on evangelism. And my fundamental thesis is that the first thing that Jesus said to his disciples is, come follow me and I will make you what?
Fishers
of men. And the very last thing that Jesus said was, go therefore and make disciples of all people, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, right? So the very first thing that Jesus said and the very last thing that Jesus said was to go and make disciples. Everybody agree? We'd agree with that. And in between, it's my fundamental thesis that the primary mission of the church is to go and make disciples, to make disciples of Jesus Christ. And 200 times in the first three Gospels, you hear the phrase, you hear the words, make disciples, make disciples, make disciples, make disciples. And the purpose of the church is primarily not to get church members. The purpose of the church is primarily not to be a forum where issues of social justice are discussed and fought about, although that's part of the church, you know. But the mission of the church, the primary central core mission of the church, is to make disciples. And that's what the church is all about. And it's a fundamental thesis of mine is that the church often gets derailed from its fundamental mission, that is making disciples of Jesus Christ. And the way a person makes disciples is through preaching the gospel, through sharing the gospel. And the gospel for me is always grace, and I'll talk about grace as affirming love, forgiving love, and forever love. Okay, and I teach in my confirmation program, what is grace? And I teach them these basic, it's AF, affirming love, forgiving love, forever love, okay? And it's love where I affirm you and your uniqueness, and you affirm me. There's this basic affirmation of one another. There's forgiveness of each other, and this love is forever. But it's only through the gospel. It's not through the law. You proclaim the law, and the opposite of the gospel is law. And law is always condemnation. The law always belittles. The law always cuts you down. And the opposite of affirmation is to pick at you, all right? And it makes no disciples to be picking at somebody, okay? Or the opposite of forgiveness is condemnation. In other words, my sins are better than your sins, my dirt is cleaner than your dirt, you know, kind of thing. And so I go out of the way to belittle you and to magnify your sinfulness and what you're doing wrong. Never does anything. And to make your love temporary. But at the heart of making disciples is proclaiming the gospel. Now, to be honest, I do lots of seminars around the country, and I would normally spend about 45 minutes right here, all right? So this is really a truncated version, and even right now I'm feeling tension inside my stomach because I'm out of rhythm. I'm out of rhythm right now because there's a whole bunch of stories that go with proclaiming the gospel. But since we only have about 50 minutes, there's a lot of stuff that's just totally omitted. So I would like to suggest to you that under that major mission of the church, proclaim the gospel in order to make disciples, every congregation has an inner mission and an outer mission. We have an inner mission of our congregation to ourselves, is to proclaim the word, to give the sacraments, and to be involved in Christian community for each other. We proclaim the gospel in order to make disciples, but within every congregation, there is both an inner mission to the congregation and an outer mission to the world, okay? And here, and the word is Christ. We are a Christ-centered religion. We are not a creator-centered religion. We are not a spirit of the universe-centered religion. We are not a justice-centered religion. We are not an environment-centered religion. And all of those things are legitimate. But all I'm saying is the central word of the Christian faith is Christ. And we are Christocentric. Denomination. We're a Christocentric church. And so what we do in the Word, and Jesus is the Word. And the purpose of the church is within the congregation and through our sermons, through the reading of scriptures, through our hymns, everything is on the Bible. It's on the Word. It's on Christ. We are a word-centered church. And so we teach the word in order to build up faith. We also give the sacraments, baptism, Holy Communion, on a regular basis, forever baptizing infants, adults. We share the sacrament every Sunday or as often as we can, depending on the congregation. And the sacraments also are a means of grace. This is a means of grace. And the gospel is always grace. So we have the word, we have the sacrament, and Christian community. And we love it. Now, why do you come to church? Ask you, why do you come to church, okay? Well, I come to church because the gospel is preached. I hear about Christ, right. I come to the church to receive the sacraments. But also another reason why you come to church is to be with Christian people, right? And all the research tells us that. All the research tells us. And if you were here last week, I gave you the Bible verse. I call it Markwort 1:7. Okay, and what Markwort 1:7 is that if one new person at the church has to have 7 new friends in 6 months. And if you do, 100% of those people stay. If you have a new person has 4 or fewer friends, 92% of them drop away. It just blows your mind. I don't care how good the preaching is. I don't care if the sacraments are given faithfully every Sunday. If there is not friendship in the community, people don't stay around. And so what I'm suggesting to you, that people stay in the church, they stay part of the church, also because of the quality of the Christian community. So I'm saying that we, the church, we proclaim the gospel at the very top in order to make disciples. We never can lose track of that central purpose. Then we have an outer mission to the world. And we are to be the love of Christ in the world. And then I divide it into two. The great command. What is the great commandment? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. So no matter where we are, we have the great command, right? And then another word we have to be the love of Christ in the world is the Great Commission, which is go therefore and make disciples of all people. So the very mission of the church, now we have a mission to the church, to the congregation, and an outer mission to the world, and we're to be the love of Christ in our jobs. You know, it's driving school bus, teaching school, being a parent. We are to be the love of Christ no matter where we are. And then I put also the great command, and the great command gets turned down here to social justice, and the great commission comes down here to evangelization. You see what I just did there? Now, with the church, this great command, go therefore and make disciples, no, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself. Another mission of a local congregation to the world is to be involved in issues of social service and social justice. Now, how many of your churches are involved in some kind of homeless ministry? Would you raise your hand? Some kind of food banks. Can I see your hands? Some kind of taking care of visiting the elderly in your community. Can I see your hands? What other kinds of social service things are you doing in your congregations? AIDS ministries. Can I see your hands? How many of you are in AIDS ministries?
Stephen Ministries.
What other kinds of social ministries?
Meals on Wheels.
Okay. And so, now we all know that, see? So we all sense that we have a mission of social service. But you notice I put a little and down here, and social justice, right? And justice is the organization of law in such a way that in the Old Testament, the widow, the orphan, and the stranger, or in the New Testament, is the poor, the maimed, the blind, and the lame, so that the little people of life are taken care of. And the purpose in the local congregation often is involved with issues of social service, but not issues of social justice, okay? And justice is the organization of law. Justice is so, the law is serving the needs of the little people of life. Let me give you some examples of that. So I now have the 1850s, I'm in Great Britain, and I'm doing a children's sermon. Hey, Mary, would you come on up? All the rest of the children stay back today. Mary comes up. How old are you, Mary? Oh, you're 9 years old. I'm really glad to see that. Mary, the year is 1850, and you are working in the coal mines in England. Okay? And you're working there 6 days a week, 12 hours a day. Okay, Mary, you got that right. You like that? Oh, no. You can't go to school. You're just doing that all the time. Now, Mary, I'm going to give you three choices. Now, you tell me which of the three you like. First, Mary, we're going to pray for you. In the prayer of the church every Sunday, on top of it, Mary. Dear Jesus, we pray that you would be with all the children who are in the coal mines. We pray that you would help them, Lord Jesus Christ. Bless them. Help them when they get hurt. Buoy them up when they're depressed. Help them, Lord Jesus Christ, in this difficult situation in life. This we ask through your Son, Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen. Every Sunday we're going to do for that. Would you like that, Mary? Oh, Mary, love it. That's great. Okay. Now the second thing, Mary, this is the second choice. What we're going to do is every Christmas, every Thanksgiving, we're going to come by your house. And we're going to have a great big turkey for you. And we're going to have, what kind of pie do you like? Oh, pumpkin pie? We're going to have pumpkin pie. And we're just going to have the best meal every Thanksgiving. We're going to come and give you the best meal. And at Christmas time, we're going to come by and leave you a Christmas basket. What would you like for Christmas? Oh, you'd like a Nintendo? Great. Okay, so we're going to put a Nintendo every Christmas. We're going to, every Thanksgiving, we're going to have a turkey. And every Christmas, you're going to have a Nintendo or a Barbie doll. You like that? Oh, yeah. Okay, now that's your second choice now, Mary. Now, the first one is that we're going to pray for you. The second one is where every Thanksgiving and Christmas, we're going to come and give you a charitable basket. Now, the third one, Mary, is we're going to work to change the law so that children can't go and work in the mines anymore. All right? We're going to go and work it. So instead, Mary, you have to go to school. Okay? But you can't work in the mines anymore. Okay, now Mary, of those three, which one do you want? Now I've done this children's sermons a few times. You know which one Mary always goes for? Number two. Yeah. Always goes for number two. Now why does Mary go for number two? A Thanksgiving and Christmas, the Thanksgiving basket and the Christmas basket. Why does she go for number two?
It's tangible.
It's tangible. It's immediate, it's fast. And what I'm suggesting to you, it's not only Mary, but it's the church. And what the church has gotten into the habit is into charity as a substitute for justice. Okay? The church has really gotten into the charity business, where we go and do these charitable things for the homeless, where we do the charitable things for the hungry, for all these different people. And what we need to get into are the issues of law that have structural changes in the lives of people. See, that's a much more complicated thing. For example, what do you know about the Wesley brothers? What do you know about the Wesley brothers? Anybody know anything about John and Charles Wesley?
No, they were from Bristol, England.
They were from Bristol, England. Holy, were you a Methodist?
No, I lived in Bristol.
Oh, you lived in Bristol. Okay, what else do you know? What else do you know about John and Charles Wesley?
Well,
they started the Methodist Church.
For working class people.
They were working class people.
Did not feel at home with the aristocracy and the Anglican Church.
Well, she knows too much. So they started this church. Which hymns did they write? Remember which hymns? How many of you sing, Jesus Christ is risen today on Easter Sunday? Okay, they read that hymn. Okay, and then how about love divine, all love excelling joy, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-da-dum. So now when you think of the Wesley brothers, you think of Methodism, you think of these great hymns, you think of their mother, who is really the organizational genius of the Methodist Church. You think of Charles with all his great hymns. You think of John Wesley, who literally rode hundreds of thousands of miles on a horseback. And I've read books on John Wesley, and he would actually write books and sermons on horseback. He knew how to write while riding a horse. And he was doing this until he was 87 years old. But whatever, did you know that they were the founders of the British Labour Party? Did you know that they were the abolitionists of slavery? Did you know that they were the ones who were at the core drive behind the abolition for the child labor laws? John and Charles Wesley? And I'm saying the church is always involved in issues of social service, which we all described. But we're also involved in issues of social justice. Now, for example, right now, this is a little small example, but it's a significant one. when I've been up here, you know, I love, oh, gee, one thing I love about Holden Village is the cup of coffee in the New York Times over here. And I go over here and I find, and there's a New York Times, and I just love to get over there, and I leave my family, and I don't tell them where I go, and I just love it over there. And so I go and I read this New York Times and the Seattle Times, New York Times. All right, so, but in all the editorials this last week, they're talking about this new tax, this tax whereby if you're a low-income person, you're making, if you're working at a job and making $8,500 or less, there's that tax credit, tax investment credit, you know, which in the last year has been $1,500, but in the new proposal is going to go up to $3,000. It's an enormous, now there's no way that all the charity in the world could match the millions upon billions of dollars which are going to go into the homes of poor people, of working poor people. It's just absolutely incredible. And it's interesting that both the Democrats and Republicans are lining up on it. Now, that's the organization of law. All the charity from the local congregations will never begin to match that at all. Never. I had a friend of mine, and this is not a nice thing to say, but I'll tell you, his name was Jack. Used to be president of LBI at Seattle. Jack, I coursed. Real religious man. And he said, and I'm quoting him because he's a real religious man, he says, charity is like taking a piss in the ocean. It doesn't do very much. Now, I think that sometimes the church really gets involved in charity, but I'm not sure how much it really does in the long run. And we need to be involved in issues of charity, but also justice. So, we have an intermission of word, Christ, sacrament, means of grace, Christian community. We are people of love, and we have an outer mission to the world, to be the love of Christ where you are, to be involved in social service and social justice, and point three, evangelization, which is reaching out to the unchurched, people who don't belong to the Church of Jesus Christ. And right now in America, that's about 100 million Americans. That's about 40% of our population. And these unchurched, by the way, gather up in large urban settings. You call them statistical metropolitan areas. And you go to the Twin Cities, like I shared with you the other day. The six counties around the Twin Cities, more than 40% unchurched. There's something like 650,000 unchurched people in the Twin Cities area, and only 18,000 or 16,000, 10,000, real small number, in these 18 counties here in southwestern Minnesota. So this reaching out to the unchurched, those who have strayed, most of the unchurched in the United States are people who have strayed away from the faith. Most of them, you know, are the unchurched, don't belong to church. Do you know that 75% of the unchurched went to Sunday school? 75%. 68% believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. 40% have had a, quote, born-again experience. 53% want to come back to church tomorrow if somebody invited them. Often when you're talking about an unchurched person in evangelization is reaching out to those who are strayed, who at one time were part of the faith, but have really lost it. And often these people have a very shallow beginnings. When they say they've gone to Sunday school, they may have gone once or twice a year, kind of thing. And we are to be a light to the Gentiles. And this is people who really weren't around the church at all in childhood, and they really don't know anything about it. You talk about Martin Luther, it's Martin Luther King. You go and you do the bread and the wine, and they never see the bread and the wine. They don't know anything about the faith. They don't know anything of the rituals. And those often result in adult baptism. So what I'd like to suggest to you is that the outer mission of the church is to be the love of Christ in society, social service and social justice, and evangelization. Now, would you all get yourself, I'd like you all to imagine a six-cylinder Ford. Everybody got a six-cylinder Ford? Okay, everybody got that in your mind? And so that means you got three spark plug wires on the left, right? Everybody with me? And you got three spark plug wires on the right. Everybody with me? Okay, now let's say in this car, the six cylinders, I went and I pulled off one spark plug wire and another spark plug wire. What would happen to that Ford engine if I pulled off two spark plug wires? But it would be like it was missing, right? That's wonderful. It'd be like it's missing, right? It would be underpowered. You would say that there's something wrong with it. What I would like to suggest to you is that many congregations are real strong on word, sacrament, and Christian community. They're real strong about being the love of Christ in the world. But in many congregations, the one about social justice has been, you know, disconnected, and the one about evangelization has been disconnected. And what I'd like to suggest to you is that many congregations feel like there isn't much power in their congregation. They feel like something's missing, and it's just, you know, how about when you got a car and it's just been all tuned up? You got an old car, and you just got it tuned up with new tires on it. Doesn't that feel good? You know, that thing really goes. And likewise, when you get a congregation tuned up, where you get all the cylinders functioning, you really feel a power going on. And so what I'm not advocating just evangelization to the exclusion of social justice or any of these. Rather, as part of the broad mission of the church, proclaim the gospel in order to make disciples. All six of these are important. But all six serve one primary purpose, to proclaim the gospel in order to make disciples. Now tonight what we're going to do, we're focusing down here on number three. Now, if you were in my class a week ago or so, what we said, and it'll be the same class this coming Monday night, I'll be preaching a sermon about fire. And basically in there I will say the primary issue facing congregations is for every member that their faith is on fire for Jesus Christ, that every member sees himself as a missionary. That the greatest tragedy is when you have a on the bulletin where it says missionaries to Brazil, and it gives some names, or missionaries to Tanzania, or if it says you, the congregation, are the ministers of the congregation, but nothing about being missionaries of the congregation. And where people in the congregation sense that pastors and ministers have a greater authority, that's the key word, to be missionaries. That's my fundamental argument. And if I am a pastor of a 500-member congregation, and if I have a highly successful congregation, by that I mean to say that if I had 400 of the 500 members convinced that they were missionaries and were doing the work of missionaries, I'm saying that church would just be, it would be doing all kinds of stuff. And so the primary purpose of the first sermon in the first class that we had together was to try to convince the lady through a whole bunch of means that they have the authority to be the missionaries of the church. And that the laity are always much more effective than pastors. And we went through that. The laity are always more effective in talking to other people about Christ than I am. So that was the first session. And I study congregations in depth who have large numbers of adult baptisms. And I try to figure out what they're doing. There's lots of us who do that. So that's another thing that we discussed. Then we also talked about what it means to speak to your children about Jesus Christ. But tonight, the theme is this, that the vast majority of people come to know Jesus Christ because of one-on-one conversations that you have had with somebody else about Jesus Christ, the gospel, and the church. Okay, so that's what we want to focus on tonight. Now, let's begin. What do you think gets in the way, or do you think... two questions. Do you think that we as Lutherans find it very easy to speak to other people about Christ?
As a whole, no.
Okay. As a whole, no. Now, why, as a whole, no. Okay. Why is it, do you think, that most of us feel uneasy about speaking to other people about Christ. Talk at once. We'll prove we're Lutherans, okay? No, let's just the opposite. What are some of the inhibitions? Why is it that we find ourselves as a community? Now, we are very different than other denominations, right? There are some denominations, whether they be Southern Baptist, it's part of the culture. If you're an Assembly of God, if you're a Foursquare Gospel, if you're a Mormon, if you are a Seventh-day Adventist, if you are a some of those congregations, those denominations, it's part of their culture. It's built into the culture of that denomination where they feel more comfortable in speaking to others about Jesus Christ. And the result, and I can show you the charts, their growth curves are like that, right?
I think one factor is generational.
Okay, what do you mean?
Just like I learned parenting from my parents.
Very
I
good.
I also learned witnessing or
very good.
From my parents.
Oh, perfect. Okay, can you expand on that? So I learned witnessing from the generation. What was the shape of that witnessing then? I told you. So you're saying we learned that.
Yeah, some of us grew up in families where talk about the gospel or about the church or about Jesus was zilch. Some of us grew up in families where it was minimal or selected, you know, only in certain circumstances. And the rest of your life, you talk about it here and here, but nowhere else.
Yeah. And very narrow spots where you can talk about Christ. Okay, very good. And you were going to say and, but I cut you off.
I don't know.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. So you say it's generational. And basically, so the research that we've been sharing, that 50% of Lutherans never speak to anybody about Christ, 40% rarely, studied by Wiesenthal, Missouri Synod. So we have 90% of Lutherans rarely or never speaking to others about Christ. This is due to, it's generational. It just wasn't done in our culture. It wasn't needed to be done because it was part of the cultural transmission. People just automatically did that. What are other reasons? I think that's real key.
Well, you're saying cultural. I think it's ethnic, aren't we, for the most part, Northern European?
Okay.
That's the way we are. If we were Italian, we'd probably be in Baptist church.
Okay.
And we gravitate towards that church, that situation in which we're comfortable.
Yeah.
We're comfortable because of our cultural background.
Yeah, so that culture is that ethnic background. Okay, okay, those are good. Any others that you think? Any others that may go beyond that? Yeah.
I think sometimes we're afraid someone will ask us a question we can't answer.
Oh, yeah, right? We're afraid. That's real deep in us. That is real deep. If you in order to write that book, you had to do lots of research and talk to lots of people. And that was really big. Is that somebody's going to ask me a question I won't be able to answer.
Where do you get the idea that we're supposed to know it all?
But
generational.
Pardon me, what?
It's generational.
But there is that feeling. It's a deeply held feeling that I will be asked questions I really don't know the answers. Now, as you go and you do research on those conversations, because you go and do research on conversations that people have about Christ, you discover that those kinds of hard questions don't come up that often, okay? But that's still a primary fear. It isn't like they're asking about complications about the Bible or things like that. Those just normally don't come up in those conversations. Other kinds of things, what kind of gets in our, what's our inhibition?
I have the Jehovah's Witnesses stop
with
me lately.
Yeah.
And they know their stuff.
Okay.
And I'm thinking I want to contradict what they're saying, but right. I'm not sure. I feel like I need more.
Okay, and so I come back. I need more knowledge. I would feel more comfortable. And there also may be something inside of me that I don't want to be labeled like them as well. Other kinds of feelings, yeah. What causes this?
We don't want to get the door slammed in our face or have someone react negatively to us.
Yeah. We don't want to have somebody react negatively to us. The door slammed in our face. Now, I forgot to mention, I'm so glad that you mentioned this, in the kind of witnessing that we're talking here, witnesses for Christ, it has nothing to do with going and calling on strangers. You know, it's not doorbelling, you know. With this whole thing called witnesses for Christ is to one's, in one's already existing natural relationships, within those natural bridges of friendship that you already have with people. It's within those friendships to talk with people about Christ. real basic one. Yeah, Ann.
I don't see in most congregations an opportunity for us to talk with each other about our walk with Christ. So we don't have practice talking with other believers.
Right.
So to talk to someone who isn't a believer is really stepping out there.
Yeah, right. It's the very nature of the educational process or the congregational process, where the nature of the structure of the classes and all those kinds of things, there isn't an opportunity for me to share my faith journey, my walk with Christ, what that means for me, what that feels like, why Christ is important to me, the way God has blessed me, the way God has, you know, the way God has been with me through these traumas and all those kinds of things. We haven't had as much opportunity to talk about those within the church, kind of thing. Any other kinds of things for you which would kind of get in the way? Yes, Alice.
Well, the fear that, knowing that they are very anti-organized religion.
Right.
They have bad experiences with the institution of churches, and to try to bring that up is
just,
you get such an either a sarcastic or some negative response, and it's very risky to put yourself out on the line when you know that they're going to have a standoff.
In nature, right?
Nature.
Yeah, on the golf course, in the fishing.
They've been hurt. And your comfort isn't going to be enough to eat. Inviting them to church is not what they need to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so what you're saying is that on some people, you know, not all, but on some, because the unchurched, there are varied lot. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's not a monolithic culture. And people who are not part of the church, but among some of the unchurched, they've really been burned.
Yeah, they're not straight.
They've been really pushed out. They've been burned, and so that takes a different kind of patience within that relationship. Okay, other kinds of comments.
Well, I don't think our church actually promotes going out to advocate. Done some myself, I know what I have. One guy that works where I work, his wife comes to our church, but he doesn't. But I still haven't convinced him that he should come to the church.
You know? Right.
So maybe, I don't know if I feel like I'm failing there or once or what.
You're not aware of what our
evangelism is.
This is what happened. We're concerned about all these people in our congregation that aren't showing up regularly.
Right, being
rather
actors.
Rather than go through the list and pick out and write down all these names, which would not be quite right.
Right.
We're just going to go visit everybody.
Right, good. And the research says, now the guy who's done by far the most research on this is a guy named Savage, and he has a ministering to inactives. It's a real, real good book kind of thing. And he says that to be effective with reaching inactives, it takes on the average 5 to 6 visits per person to pull them into the life of the church. Because, you know, at first there's the defensive visit, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But finally, when an inactive person becomes genuinely convinced about your concern for them, and he says, on the average, and he will give you the research. He's done, through his trained visitors, they've done 50,000 visits to inactive people, and he can give you percentages and all that kind of stuff. But all I know is that to have a one visit to all those people is a recipe for failure. You know?
You're saying 5 visits by the same...
I'm not saying. I'm saying that Savage is saying is that if you're really concerned about reaching inactives in your congregation, that is the hardest, most time-consuming job that there is. And most churches just don't do it, all right? And I'm not discouraging you. And he really... And if sometime, and again, I'm not pushing it because I wrote it, but this book, what it does here, it summarizes all the research from all these different people who are really active in evangelism. I summarize Savage's stuff for you in this book. That's an enormously important thing to do, but it's a lot more work than most people realize. Yes?
Is he saying 5 visits from one individual or 5 visits from within the congregation?
5 visits within the congregation. That people are, that there is a, that they know that it's more than just a ritualistic, I got to endure this visit kind of thing. And basically it moves into hearing why the person is disenfranchised. See, there are reasons that person is not coming around. And you may hear, let's say it was a person who has had really had bad experiences, like you were talking about, Alice, about a person that really had bad experiences with the church. You end up doing some therapy, listening to all those reasons why they didn't come to a church. And often that kind of visit is really much more effective. Let's say that you are married to this person. That visit is not to be done by the wife of, because that turns into a harangue. That goes nowhere. Where it really is much more effective is with somebody who works with this man, somebody who fishes with this man. See, that kind of visit is really effective. But such visits are made and such conversations are held only, if I'm back to what you were suggesting, is if a congregation persuades its members that a primary mission of the church is to make disciples. See, where that everyone in the congregation has been given that authority to be missionaries. The missionaries, that the pastors and the missionaries of the church, that status thing in the church, gets in our way. And the churches which are on the grow, churches which have enormous missionary programs, are always dominated by the witness of the lady. That's where the key is, yes.
I think the other topics or reasons are the bigger ones.
Yeah.
I have one more little one that I want to ask. Do any of you go to a church like the welcoming is uneven? Or that's going to be a Sunday.
Yeah. Football team. It may be to a... it may be to a baseball game. It may be eventually to a home Bible study. It may be to a men's retreat. It may be to something like that, where one starts to find relationships, eye-thou relationships developing. And so when that person comes to church on Sunday morning for the first time, there may be two or three people say, well, hi, Bob, how you doing? Hey, good to see you here today. And it's that friendliness on Sunday morning. Even the worship service is crummy. They just wait. You said the friendliness of the people. That was the second point here. But the congregations really need to work on that thing, the friendliness of the people. Now, in research that I shared with you in other classes and we'll share with you on an overhead in the future, when you ask unchurched people who went through adult baptisms or affirmation of faith, they were part of the Strayed, you know, this is a study of magnet churches, and you ask these people, these unchurched people who joined a congregation, what were the most important things? One was the friendliness of the people on Sunday morning, and secondly was the friendliness of the pastor on Sunday morning. Now, the dynamism of the worship service was number six. Okay? And so it's interesting that see, and for me, friendliness is another form for grace. Grace is affirmation, forgiveness, you know, that it's an affirmation of a person, it's to be friendly and kind to them. It's a form of grace. And so the warmth and friendliness of the pastor on Sunday morning and the warmth and friendliness of the people on Sunday morning is absolutely crucial. Now, I'm not trying to defend to have lousy worship services. And because one of the sessions that we're going to talk about here, and the third session I have this next week, is the worship service as evangelism. And my job is to go around, and I study congregations, and for example, I sometimes say I'm a conduit of creativity. I go and do these preaching seminars around the country. And so every time I do a preaching seminar around the country, I say, okay, pastors, where are you getting your stories? And they tell me the books, and I write them down. And then I go from seminar after seminar, and now I know the top five books that pastors are using to get their stories. Okay? And the pastor may not know them, okay? And then I go around and I say, okay, pastors, what liturgies are you using? And then I pass those on. Or another one that's really important is I go and say, what are the new contemporary hymns that you like? Now, you don't like all of Osaka's hymns. Which ones do you like? You don't like all of this guy in Burnsville. What's his name? His hymns. Which ones do you like?
Marty
Hoggle. Marty Hoggle. Marty Hoggle's liturgies, for example. Not Ray, there's a guy in Burnsville. I can't think. He's got this book on hymns. But the point is that so in that session that we're going to have, worship as evangelism, I'm going to give you all kinds of suggestions of things that can be done to revitalize the worship life. I think that's really an important equation. But the best way to revitalize your worship life is the friendliness of the people on Sunday morning and the friendliness of the pastor on Sunday morning. And that's not to devaluate the preaching of the gospel. Okay, let's focus for a minute. So those are, okay, let's talk for a minute. Now, I'm going to pass out for you and distribute for you, or you can pick them up as you want. These are the reasons why people give. What gets in my way of talking to other people about Christ? I've summarized every possible reason there. And if you were taking this course, what you would do is you would go through this and you would check it out. You would check it out, what you have, okay? You would check it out. I have fears of saying the wrong thing, of alienating or offending other person, of being accused or taunted or ridiculed, of treading on the right to believe as they want, of sounding pious and judgmental, of being stereotyped and pigeonholed, of being able to answer their questions, of being unable to answer their questions, of talking to people I just may know not know that well, of ruining or creating tension in a friendship. That was point one. There are 17 of them. And the point is, you would go through and say, this is true of me. Okay? And then you break down into small groups of two and you talk about, what's going on. What gets in your way? Okay? And so each one of you would be different. What gets in your way? Each one of you would talk that through. And then the last question is, what can you do in order to change that? You get it? And then you talk that through. So all through this course, there are questions like that, trying to get at it. And also through this course are the 17 reasons that people give why they're not part of the church. I've taught this class a lot of times, and I put down responses to all 17 questions that people... The church burned me when I was a kid. We hear that all the time. It's one of the 17. Now, I've asked lots of ladies. I always ask the lady. I never ask pastors. I ask the lady, what do you say to that? And I have all kinds of answers in there. Not that answers, but they became points of dialogue, okay, in there. But let's go to the question. In your conversations with Christ, about Christ, give me some examples out of your life where you have had conversations about Christ with another human being. Is that too hard of a question? Yeah, okay.
The last 20 weeks here at Bowling.
Okay, tell me about that.
This has been the only safe place I have ever experienced outside of maybe the women's retreat with people I didn't know yet.
Okay.
Where I had to gradually get that comfort level, but here I got that comfort level very quickly because there's a lot of dialogue, there's lots of new ideas, Vespers every night that spoke to me, Matins that spoke to me, I was just inundated, and I can talk, I feel very comfortable here that I can talk to complete strangers about the spiritual journey,
okay.
And it's just such a safe place,
okay.
Because there's very little judgment here.
Okay, very good.
And lots of experts and
okay.
People who know what they're talking about, and they're available so you can go back and ask them more questions.
Okay, that's really good. Others, that's really good. So you're saying that the retreat, tell me, have you been talking to anybody about Christ lately? Is that a part of your conversation?
Yeah.
I just like, have any of you been talking about Christ? What's been happening?
Well, I would say about 9 months ago, I went to a very nice friend, a tumor on the brain.
Okay.
And I think when you meet the life-threatening situation near death, you have no trouble talking. I never have any of it. I've never had any trouble talking about it now because of that experience.
Okay, very good. So that's a real profound. When you get down to the life and death issues, the real big issues, we start talking about Christ and the meaning of God, our spiritual journey, for the people involved. And death, stroke, heart attack, cancer, childhood trauma, problems with our kids, stuff that really rips our guts apart. We start talking about Christ and faith.
The only time I was brave enough to talk about Christ at work was when I was in tears after the murder of my niece.
Okay.
And I could talk about death and resurrection hope then, only.
Okay.
Not before then.
Okay. So I hear a saying that we as Lutherans, anyhow, Christ seems to help us. kind of thing, yes.
Now, if you're out visiting with people about Christ and they come at you, well, does he belong to your church? Yeah, so. You belong to your church. I don't want to be.
Yeah.
He's a sinner. How are you going to have
to? Oh, boy. Those are tough. You have to get into the situation. That's tough.
Alan.
Alan.
Alan, what do you have?
I have a good friend, we talk about all.
I have a good friend, and we talk about everything. Is that what you're saying, Alan? See, I think that's absolutely right. I have a good friend, and we talk about everything. See, and that's the heart of the witnessing process. It's not necessarily the strangers, but I have a good friend. And if you're a good friend, it's the very nature to talk about Christ, your spiritual journey, your matters of faith. That's at the very heart of it. Well, one thing about this course here at Holden, you know, it only gives you an hour, and
you say, I try to avoid talking about church.
Okay.
I try to just talk about what God has done for me. Things come up and God planned this for me, like going up here. How are we going to do this for 2 months?
Yeah.
God took care of it.
I see. So thank you for that. See, I think it's really important for us to move past the church talk, you know, kind of selling job in the church. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of it. But I think it's more important to put that conversation in small ways. Boy, what a beautiful day God created today. You know, look at these beautiful mountains that God created. It's those kinds of, rather than, oh, what beautiful mountains. It's what beautiful mountains. Oh, boy, thank God for such a beautiful day as this. Boy, was I blessed when God gave me such beautiful kids. Well, how could God be so good to me as to give me such a great wife? You know, it's those kinds of conversations about God written into your daily conversation, which are really important. And by the way, you never ask me as a pastor help for this, because the lady always speak about God in a much simpler way, you know, much simpler way. One last comment, yes.
Oh, I was just thinking one of my favorites, and I've heard a lot lately, and it really warms my heart that so many of my friends and people I know say, I don't know what I do without my faith. And
That's a wonderful comment. Don't know what I would do without my faith. Are there any others that are part of your vocabulary? I like that one. Any others that are kind of disarming that way? Yes, Mark?
Meeting the people where they're at. You know, when you're one-on-one with the people that you're with, you're meeting them at their level.
Right.
If you're in the same level as they are, you can talk with them and more open.
Oh, that's real basic, right? Real basic right there. And if you come off with any kind of, if there's a trace of spiritual superiority or some kind of that in your life, that won't go anyplace, you know. But it's to be right with people where they are on that level. And then as I said to you in that sermon the other day, from that quote from Phillips Brooks, a preacher, a witness's instinct is to feel instantly how Christ and human need belong together. How Christ will meet that person's need and my need is real basic. And that's always the basic intuition of every missionary. You know, what are the needs of that person? What are my needs? And how can Christ address those needs? Yeah.
If my intuition level is too low for me to be able to figure that out, I can still listen.
That's right. That's very basic. And to listen is to ask them about what they're thinking, feeling, what are their experiences with God. Well, listen, I apologize. On this kind of thing, you know, I just didn't even get the top of the tip of the toe into the water. But the fundamental assertion that I am making is that the purpose of the church, we are an apostolic church. We are sent out into the world in order to preach the gospel in order to make disciples. That's the central mission of the church. And that the laity are the most important component, and that you as a lay person have the authority and are given the authority to speak about Christ to other people. And as you are empowered to do that in one-on-one relationships, that's the key, is for us to develop the courage and the willingness and the comfortability in doing that. And I'd like to suggest also,
in your congregation as a possibility, as a way to help your whole congregation to be more comfortable in doing that, is to find some way, some educational process, whereby people become more comfortable in speaking about Christ. Now, maybe at a women's retreat, all right? And all I'm suggesting is that this course does that. It creates the process whereby people become more comfortable in speaking about Christ. Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate you coming. Thank you very much. Thank you. And if you're here next week, I have 3 or 4 sessions next week. Hopefully.